Audio for the Retro Computing Roundtable is hosted by CyberEars. When you need a rock-solid platform to host and distribute your podcast or other audio media, head over to CyberEars.com. Fast, reliable hosting with unlimited bandwidth. CyberEars is your audio on your terms.
It's Sunday, November 24th, 2013, and welcome to episode 62 of the Retro Computing Roundtable.
Well, it seems the Emerald City is far behind me now, and my world has changed back from black to white. But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I like to know.
The RCR is a podcast about retro computer news, nostalgia, and collecting. I'm not Carrington Vanston, but sometimes I wish I was. And let's face it, don't we all? But Carrington doesn't have a TV show named after him, because as we all know, my name is Earl.
Very nicely done.
Carrington, how are you, sir?
I don't have a show. There were people named Carrington in Dynasty.
Yes.
My whole life, people have asked me if I was named after Dynasty. I'm like, I came first. How young do you think I am? Dynasty was after me.
But, you know, actually, I think the network execs considered my name as Carrington, but it was just too many syllables.
They knew I'd sue them.
Yes, that's right. Copyright infringement.
Yes.
You're good, I trust.
I am fantastic. Spread the word.
You mentioned it's a little chilly.
It is chilly. It's in the negatives here in Celsius land, negative something, negative five or something at the moment, though it's coming up on evening. And that's very cold. As I was explaining, or as we were discussing before the mics went live, we're made of mostly water, and zero Celsius is the freezing point of water. So when it's negative, it doesn't make any sense to me that people want to go outside. It sounds dangerous.
We shouldn't do it. Yep. We are, in fact, ugly bags of mostly water.
I know that I am, definitely. So I don't like to go outside when it's this cold. I'm a bad Canadian, but I don't like it.
I don't blame you.
Yep.
It's not that cold here in Portland, but it is chilly. Part of the reason it's chilly is because we've been having sunny skies. And without the cloud cover, you don't get that thermos effect. But I'm not going to complain because we've been seeing that big, round, bright thing in the sky. And that's unusual for November.
I've heard of that bright thing.
So I'm happy. I'm not going to complain about it. In fact, I'm so enthusiastic about it that I'm going to jump right into the host topic.
Ooh, hit me.
Oh, yes. So I don't know if this is as much a discussion topic, but I'm sure we can have some discussion around it.
Discuss it.
Good. As much as a trend that I've noticed in retro computing. I saw it with myself and then with postings from other people, like on the Classic Computing Tech mailing list and the Vintage Computer Forum and just chatting with friends. It seems like a bunch of us in the vintage computer world have gone through this cycle. What I say is, you know, this life cycle of retro computing.
The circle of life for retro computing.
Right. Okay. Don't make me say that.
And what is this cycle?
Well, it started with a lot of us by going, hey, I used to play with those old computers, and I really liked them. So you pick up a system or two, and somebody's got one in their garage, or you get one at a car boot sale or at the thrift store. And you go, wow, that's a lot of fun. And then you wonder, are there other people out there who are doing the same sort of thing? And you hit the internet and you find, oh my gosh, there are other crazies who like this sort of stuff. And wow, look at all the computers that they're playing with. And so people start finding out, your friends start knowing that, hey, he's the guy who likes old computers. And they give you a bunch of stuff. Like, I don't know. In the early days, I had friends give me tons of really nice vintage computers in beautiful condition, the kind of stuff that you'd pay bigger bucks for now on eBay.
But eBay.
But it wasn't popular or expensive back then. So you started loading up, and pretty soon you're looking around at your house and you no longer can get from your living room to your kitchen because your house is too full.
And you have an angry spouse.
Yeah, and you have an angry spouse, exactly. And you realize you've collected this mountain of computers, and you find that I don't have time to play with 30 computers. When I did my spreadsheet not too long ago, even though I have tried to cut back, I've still got in the neighborhood of 30 different vintage computers. Now, some of them are small, but they're all still vintage computers, and I just don't have time to cycle through that many.
Right, and with 30 systems, no matter how small they are, that's going to add up space-wise.
It does.
Just the power cables alone are going to take up a whole drawer.
And, you know, these things have bit rot that even just sitting there for some reason, then when you turn them on, you're always scared that the magic smoke's going to come out. And because you got 30 systems, you don't have 30 spare systems.
No.
And you don't have the money to go out and buy the accessories that you want, the cool SD card drive enhancements or RAM expansions or internet connectivity or all the cool stuff that's coming out. You realize it would break the bank to buy those kind of cool new accessories for all of your systems. So you go, I think I better downsize. And you start getting rid of systems. And then it seems like things are now coalescing into niches. Like, let's say I got a lot of Commodore stuff and a lot of Apple stuff. And right. Say, I'm interested in Commodore, but I'm not all that interested in Apple, which actually isn't the case in my case. But let's say that were the case. So then I find somebody else who is not that interested in Commodore. They've got some things that I want. I've got some things that they want. We start trading. Or this happens organically over eBay, that I sell the Apple stuff and I buy the Commodore stuff and somebody else does just the opposite. And so now you have collections that are more tuned in, more dialed in to what you like, and you've dispersed the computers that you no longer have an interest in and were sadly just sitting on the shelf. And so anyway, I've kind of noticed that trend, and I wonder, I know that in your case that you keep your collection lean and mean.
Well, I fought that trend because I would exactly follow that cycle. And I think that cycle you have talked about, that rise and the boom and bust of the collecting, is something that almost everybody goes through. It's just because I live so minimally when it comes to like stuff. People come over to my house and it's frequently the case that people ask me like, were you robbed? Like, where are your things? Like, I have, my tastes run towards very minimal, very modern furnishings and very, very little stuff compared to most people. And since I live in a condo, I don't have the attic or the basement or the garage so the less space you have, the less stuff you have.
Nothing wrong with being Spartan.
Well, yeah, but I think if I was sitting here not in a 1,000-square-foot condo, but instead in a 2,000-square-foot house that also had a big garage and attic space and a cellar or something, I might just have a massive collection because I'm also a very weak, weak person. So it's like, oh, I want more. So really the only reason my collection is so relatively small, just like a couple of Apple II systems, is partly my Apple II bigotry, which I'm famous for, and I don't want any other systems, and just partly because of lack of space. But I do think that the cycle you're talking about is what most people go through. And I think a few factors contribute to it. One is a lot of people, when you first come to this hobby, they come for, at least in part, the same reason, which is that wash of nostalgia that you talked about, where somebody says, I'm now hitting, you know, I'm in my 40s, I'm hitting midlife, I'm something, and I'm like, I remember those computers I had as a kid, life was simpler, life was awesome, oh my gosh, I can pick that up for $100, and they buy it, and it's that nostalgia glow, and that's a little addictive. Like, it's easy to go, I could have this game too, or what about that computer? And then you get into, well, what about that thing I always wanted but I could never afford as a kid?
Right.
And so, because now, yeah.
That was Apple II.
Exactly. That, well, almost everybody was Apple II, frankly, with those prices. But so many things. I remember when I went off to university, the Christmas before that, my parents got me as one of my Christmas gifts a Macintosh SE. So, and it was a relatively, and my sister got a Mac Plus. I remember I got the better one that year because when she was staying in high school, I was going off to university. And it was a relatively tricked out SE. So we're talking one that had the maxed out RAM, which I think would have been probably 4 megs or 8 megs or whatever the most you could have. It wasn't much. And it was the one that had the one floppy drive and the internal hard drive, which would have been a 20 meg hard drive. And that's the kind of computer that at the time, like, I didn't appreciate as a kid, but was probably a $5,000 or $6,000 purchase. Like, it was crazy money. And nowadays, not an SE30, but like a regular, that SE, well, eBay prices have gone bonkers. That's now in the few hundreds, even if you're overpaying. You're not going to pay $2,000 for that thing. So,
right.
And the difference between a $5,000 computer to a high school student in the 80s and a $200 computer to a guy in his 40s who's well-employed, it's essentially come down to pocket change. I mean, while it's not nothing, and I do lament how these prices have gone crazy, it has turned it into, like, all these things that you once dreamed of and salivated over and wish you could had are now available and are equivalent of, you know, half a week's wage or something. Like, they're all
still, it's still affordable. I mean, we've mentioned before,
so it's tempting.
If you think about other people's hobbies, like, I've got a friend who's really into jeeping.
Oh, cool. And yeah, like overlanding or whatever the macho guys who are cooler than me call it.
Exactly. And other people who have boats or RVs or even radio controlled aircraft that can get really expensive.
But with something like jeeping, well, you've got that vehicle, and like I've got a Harley, and so there's always the siren call of the accessories for your vehicle, but at least they're just things you're bolting on a vehicle, on a Jeep or something. Whereas this hobby, retro computing, the more you buy stuff, you're not really buying things to just stick on or in the one computer. Like, every time you buy something, it's another piece of shelf space. Like, it is
right.
The kind of, if you get seriously into knitting, how much more room is it really going to take? I mean, you're making a bunch of sweaters, you'll give them away. You might have tons and tons of balls of yarn, but it just means you have that one big basket of yarn. I don't really know anything about knitting, so I'm imagining. But if you get seriously into retro computing and you go crazy, you're suddenly using up a whole room. So it's the kind of thing I think that can easily get out of hand and that causes this big boom. And then, you know, you sort of look around and go, I've got all these things that I never touch and I've got an angry wife. And what am I supposed to do? I also don't know a lot about wives. I'm single. I can have. And so I think that causes us to then trim that down. But I do think it is a cycle though. I have already bought things the second time during my retro period. Like I had them back in high school. I gave up. I bought them. I got rid of them. And then I kind of regretted getting rid of them, and I've bought them again. So I've had Apple IIcs come and go through my hands in like within the current decade. And that's kind of crazy. And so I do think it is a cycle that does actually repeat with a lot of us.
I had the same thing with the Apple II. I had an Apple IIe, and I got rid of it. And this was before all the mania on eBay with the prices.
Right.
They were still reasonably cheap. And then I decided I wanted one again, and I looked at the prices.
Like, and what happened?
My countenance dropped. I thought, oh my gosh. And then David was nice enough to give me one that he had inherited from another source.
See, David's a fellow with a huge collection. I don't know if he still has it because he's gotten seriously into the comedy stuff, so I don't know if he's been trimming out his collection, but he had a collection that made most of us envy because he had, like, you know, a big collection with a lot of stuff and a lot of variety.
I think my wake-up call was when I got the PDP-11, which I don't regret at all in any way, shape, or form, but it's huge, and the terminals that connect up to it. And
when
all
you
the
do
spare
start buying the big iron Earl, yes, you may have a problem.
Yeah, you're past that. Well, I didn't buy it. It was a gift, but
well,
again,
still.
It's one of those things that, you know, you look and you've got a mini computer.
And you don't want it to get trashed. I will take things in sometimes, like, because they're stray kittens. I'm like, well, I don't want this, but it'll be thrown away otherwise. And so I get it, and I try to find a house for it. Yeah.
The gentleman had said, if somebody doesn't come get this, then this is heading off to scrap. And actually, some pieces had already gone off to scrap. I was crying bitter tears when I found out that a deck writer, which is my dream terminal, the one that I have salivated over, that I used back in my college days, was one of the things that had already gone to the recyclers.
And because of this cycle, we will, a year from now, have an episode where we talk about how you now have 15 deck writers and are trying to figure out what to do with them. Beware the cycle, Earl. Beware
of
the cycle.
Well, I already have too many top major printers. I've got Epsons.
Is there any such thing as to actually? What I'm looking for is a good. I never had a great daisy wheel printer.
I have two of them.
I know. But
two Diablos.
We might want to talk, you and I, because I'm kind of anxious to get my hands on. And yet, what am I gonna do with that printer? Like, I try to be sensible, but it's just like, I'm like, but I want one. even me, who doesn't want to collect anything, I kind of want one. So,
oh, one was the Xerox version that actually is a printing terminal. It has a keyboard and the whole nine yards. It's actually an OEM of a Diablo.
So okay, because I have this dream. We should talk about me getting that from you. And here's why. Here's why you should give this to me, Earl. Let me give you my pitch in front of all our eyes.
$1 billion to ship.
I have a sponsor for my other show that's a shipping company. So my dream has, I'm going to tell you this dream and you're going to share my dream. And audience, okay, get ready. I'm going to make you want to own something soon. Because here's my image of a Happy Carrington. Happy Carrington comes home and he opens his door and sitting there in the corner in the little foyer part, yes, us Canadians pronounce it foyer, is this terminal printer. Yes, the foyer. So is this printer of some sort with a nice kind of sound to it of some sort. And what's been printed out are like my tweets for the day or something. I really want
that
to come home,
so
but have it all. But what I really think would be the ultimate, and I think I'm going to have to build it myself, but the ultimate tweet printing machine would be an old stock market ticker. Like, wouldn't that be the most awesome way to get tweets? I want one of those big glass bubbles.
It would be so totally cool, but where are you going to find it?
I'm going to build one, I think. Maybe that'll be a Maker Faire thing. But don't you think that would be awesome? I would love to have a big stock market ticker. And then, like, I'd sit there and it would... I'm like, oh, tweets are up.
Tweets would be perfect because they're 140 characters.
Exactly. And they'd be all in a row. And it would just, tweets are up. Tweets are down.
And if you don't follow a million people on your Twitter feed, it would actually be viable. I've thought the exact same thing, and I went looking for a command line Twitter client, and I actually found one that was written by a fellow that I used to kind of partner with on the Retrobits website way back in the day, before even the Cameron Kaiser is his name, and he actually wrote a command line client for Twitter, and you can go out and get it, and it's very cool.
That is cool.
Yeah. And this was way even before the podcast that he and I hung out. In fact, if you go look at his FloodGap website, you'll see that certain of the subdirectories are Retrobits from way back in our partnering days.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, he does a great website, by the way, called The Secret Weapons of Commodore. That is
That's a good title.
It is all the machines that were in Commodore's R&D labs that never saw the light of day. And because of Commodore's exceedingly dysfunctional management, that actually amounted to a lot of prototype machines.
Nice. I have just found it, and I will make sure it goes in our show notes. That is very cool.
Oh, yeah. It hasn't been updated for a while because there haven't been many more discoveries.
Sure, yeah.
At this point, he's done about all the archaeology that you could do.
Nice, and there's a ton here, though. This is very cool. Nice.
Oh, you could spend a day on the site if you're interested in it. So,
nice.
Anyway, so that's the cycle of retro computing. I think it happens to a lot of us, and we feel your pain.
We do. We do indeed.
So, a homebrew computer club reunion. Ooh, I wanted to go to this.
I wanted to go as well. So, we I'll make this quick because we did talk about it on a previous show. I think it was a Kickstarter. And if you had submitted the Kickstarter and everything was like a power of two, the different values you could put in. But if you pitched enough money into the pot, then you got to attend. 100 people, roughly, that were members of the old, or the original members of the Homebrew Computer Club got together. And lots of people could pay to be sort of in the audience and schmooze with the people. There are all, and it just, it took place in Silicon Valley. I'm very jealous. There's lots of stuff on the net about the event. I found that the write-up over at CNET was one of the better ones. So that's one of the ones I'll link to. So if you haven't yet seen the photos from the event, it's just something to sort of look upon. And I just love that this happened. And I know it's a weird year for it to have happened because it was something like the 38th year. So it's weird to say, well, why wouldn't you do it on 40 or 50? But these people are getting also up in age.
You want to get together while they're still here.
Yeah, I know it's weird to say. I don't want to say that they're all but drop dead.
No disrespect intended.
Yeah, don't wait 12 more years.
We've already lost some of the pioneers.
Exactly. So, but it's cool. Like this, even this opens. It says, in this corner, it's Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak. In that corner, it's phone freaking pioneer Captain Crunch. Over there, it's Apple employee number one, Bill Fernandez. Across the room, there's Lee Felsenstein, creator of the Osborne. Like, just like... this is a group of serious pioneers. This article kind of refers to them as they are among the founding fathers of computers, as you Americans like to call people. And it just really is. It's an important I think it's one of the important events, and what they did before was important, and they probably didn't realize at the time how important it was. But these are all people that I admire very much. It was really cool to see that there was some telepresence robots there, because these are, of course, super geeks. So if some of them couldn't go, they're like, well, send my robot in my place. They're that kind of guy and gal. And in fact, were there any women? Come to think of it, is this a big sexist group of guys? Who knows? That one I don't know, but
well,
I wish I could have been
there. Well, when you look at the photos of the Homebrew Computer Club from back in the day, it seems like a fairly male-dominated...
So we're going to start the rumor now that Steve Wozniak is a woman. You heard it here first, folks.
We could do that. Now, there's all sorts of legal reasons why we might not want to
Think the Wozette is going to trend on Twitter. Hashtag Wozette.
But in Canada, you may be safe from a certain level of litigation, so I'll let you run
it's
with that.
It's too cold to litigate in Canada. I'm safe till April. No, nobody's litigating anybody. No one's going to court. You'll die on the way, bags of mostly water. So I'm safe to call anybody anything, so don't mess with me on the internet for the next 4 months. So anyway, I wish I could have gone. We'll have a note. Probably our audience already knows about this and has followed. But if you haven't, there's a nice write-up on CNET that will then also link you over to a bunch of photos. And it's a great event, and I wish I could have been there.
Any video?
I don't know.
Oh,
I will make some over at wazette.com. And that will be heavily CG for reasons I can't disclose at the moment.
Well, just for augmentation reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. So what have you got news-wise that could possibly compete with my opening shot?
This isn't news. In fact, this is something that happened a very long time ago. But, you know, people love unboxing videos.
Yes,
I think,
they do.
Didn't Ken Gagne just do an unboxing video?
He did
video
a pair, because he did the Wii U, which took off like crazy, and I think got so many views that through his ad revenue, he's putting seven kids through college or something. It was bonkers. Because it's really good. Like, Ken knows how to do an unboxing. Like, I've watched him.
He's good.
He's so personable, and he shows all the details, but also brings a personality to it. It is Ken has found his niche. It's awesome. So he did ones for both the PS4 and the Xbox One. So I have viewed them both. We'll have links in the show notes. They're awesome.
Yes.
Wait, you know what? Should we link? They're not really retro. You know what? It's Ken. We'll link. It's Ken.
Yeah,
we'll
it's
link.
Ken.
We'll link for Ken.
Come
link
on.
For Ken.
Cool. And, you know, I thought, is the unboxing video a new phenomenon? Or were they always there and we just missed them because we didn't have YouTube? So one of the mail lists that I'm subscribed to, the CC Tech, has these occasional just gems that come through. The conversation's always interesting. But occasionally you get something that's just wow. And so I saw this link come through for a video of Queen Mary College in London receiving their ICT 1905E mainframe. Now you might think, well, what's so interesting about that? Well, the ICT 1905E came out in 1968. So my guess is that this video is early 70s. It didn't have a date on it, at least not that I saw. Careful viewers, if you happen to see a date on here that I missed, let us know. But circa early 70s is what I'm guessing. And it's actually a fairly extended video. How many minutes was it? 17 minutes or something like that. It has amazing Austin Powers.
Yes,
or Benny Hill.
Minutes. I'm scrubbing through it right now, and this is super cool.
It's fun. They show the mainframe arriving by truck. They show the huge crane lifting this sucker up to
I'm
the
at that part
floor.
Now. Welcome to your computer. We brought it with a crane. That's
yeah. They show taking off the boxing of the computer, setting it up, getting it running, brand new
and
teletypes
everybody's
coming
smoking.
Out of the box.
It's a whole bunch of guys. They're all smoking, and they're unloading computer bits the size of refrigerators.
What
this
was funny was
cool.
When you look at the old 70s NASA video and you see people sitting around smoking in mission control, it's so
a different
funny.
World, man.
But in any event, this video I thought was great, if for nothing else, for the wonderful period music that you've got going.
This is totally sweet.
So I thought people would enjoy it.
Nice, nice. So ICT 1905E mainframe. Earl, are you going to get one?
You know, I was thinking about it.
If it gets offered to you for free, you going to pick up a couple?
Yeah.
Part of your cycle? Are you on that part of the cycle?
Portland General Electric would love me.
I guess they would. Oh my gosh, right. Yeah, holy cow.
They put this giant high tension tower outside my house. People are like, what's going on?
Very cool.
So that's the deal on that. So go out to Vimeo and watch that. And then once you're done, come back and listen to Carrington talk about sophistication and simplicity.
Yes.
It sounds like you're describing yourself, Carrington.
Yes, they call me simple. Many people have called me simple with a snarl when they say it. No, that is, of course, the title of Dr. Steve Weirich's book, which has now been as he puts it, truly and finally available on Amazon for pre-order. As soon as I heard that on the list, I went out and I pre-ordered myself a copy, so I'm very excited. It'll be delivered, it looks like, in December at some point, so it's coming up, and it's still available for pre-order right now. And I am really looking forward to it, so I'm bringing everything back to the Apple. So this is, the title is The Life and Times of the Apple II Computer. So, and of course, we're talking Dr. Steve here, so lots of info, lots of great accuracy. I'm so excited to get my hands on this book. I have been looking forward to it forever. So it's $29.95 is the price of the book, but you can have, like, there's I think there's some sort of discounted version available or something. But anyway, it's a $30 book. You can pre-order it. There's a link. We'll link over to the Apple2History.org site, which is, of course, Dr. Steve's site, and then you can click on there to go over to Amazon and pre-order. And the reason I'm going to link to there rather than directly to Amazon is I'm not sure, but, like, you know, a lot of times with Amazon links, people will have, like, codes embedded in the link where they get a bit back. So maybe, right. I don't know if he's done that, but if so, then I want to give him the sort of the maximum value for his books.
They get a little bit of extra boost.
Yeah, so that's the only reason I'm going to link to that rather than directly to Amazon, because we don't have one of those Amazon-y thingies, so I might as well link it to his just in case. So it'll be coming out in December. So it's just weeks away, and I'm very, very excited.
So now we can say that Dr. Steve has literally written the book on Apple II history.
Yes, he has, literally. And this, a lot of this would be stuff that was previously available on the web. I think he's still making a lot of it available on the web. But I'm very, very keen to have it as something I can hold in my hands. So.
Oh, in the book form. I've been looking forward to this ever since I heard he was doing it. I've been looking at his site forever.
Oh, forever and ever and ever. Yes, absolutely. It's such a go-to resource.
So there you go.
Yep, very excited.
So we got a link sent to us from Richard, one of the listeners to the RCR. Thank you very much, Richard. Mm-hmm. This is very interesting. I've listened to part of it. I didn't have time to listen to all of it yet.
I will
be going back to listen to all of it because it's so fun. Forrest Mims, the guy who got a lot of people started in the electronics hobby with his educational resources. He was interviewed on a podcast that I hadn't actually encountered before, but we'll be listening to from now on, called the Amp Hour. They self-describe as the world's largest and most respected electronics-oriented radio show.
Oh my goodness.
I've been getting so much into the electronics and the hobbyist stuff that how could this not be on my iTunes? I haven't heard it before. But, I mean, they're the world's largest, so I guess I should be listening.
Well,
right?
They're even larger now that you subscribed.
They're
larger by one. One
yes.
More.
I think I pushed them over the edge.
They're larger actually. By an earl. an earl is a standard measurement for subscribers in podcasting. How many earls?
It is. It
how many earls
exactly
per hour?
One subscriber.
Is an earl. Yes. How many earls
yes,
per hour?
The National Institute of Standards and Technology.
I know that when we're trying to get
that.
The sponsors, they're always interested in your earl turnover and that kind of stuff, so yes.
It's an RFC. So so one thing that I didn't know about Forrest Mims is that he was a co-founder in the early days of MITS.
I don't even know who Forrest Mims is. I hate to say, like, it doesn't even ring a bell.
You got to go check it out. You got to Google it. So here, let me Google his name. I'm working with two monitors now.
Ooh,
so
the
cool
Mr.
thing
Fan.
Is I can be looking at the show notes in one. And he's the third, by the way. Forrest Mims III, and this is from Wikipedia, is an amateur scientist, magazine columnist, and author of the popular Getting Started in Electronics and Engineers mini notebook series of instructional books that was originally sold in Radio Shack electronics stores.
And I see that he is, after World War II, he became the founder of MITS. So
he's
with Ed Roberts are the people that, him and Ed are people who put out the Altair.
Well, okay. These were back in the days when MITS was a more, Well, I guess they were always a hobbyist sort of endeavor because the Altair was a kit. But before that, they sold other kinds of kits, electronics kits and calculator kits.
Well, kind of makes sense because MITS, I always forget, but the T in MITS stands for telemetry, I think.
Right.
Like, so they were like a telemetry.
And telemetry.
Yeah, they were a telemetry country. I always forget that they're part of, they were like clearly into rocketry or something, which is just kind of awesome. Like, if you want to make your company sound pretty cool, like, have telemetry in the name because everyone's going to be a little afraid of you.
Right, as they should.
They absolutely should.
So the thing that I find in this interview is that Forrest Mims is a really engaging speaker. He's really having a good time with these fellas on the podcast and talking about some of his early exploits, including he was a rocketry enthusiast. And so he's launching rockets in Saigon during the war days, and lots of fun ensued, as you could imagine, because, you know, rockets there might be misinterpreted at that particular point in time. So,
and I see that this was in their episode number 171, so they have been doing it for a while. And in fact, 172 has already come out, so they keep it up and they pump these out. So, nice. Always love to be introduced to a new good podcast.
Me too. So the Amp Hour, check it out, and we'll have a link both to the main site and also to this specific interview.
Absolutely, yeah, on episode 172. Cool. Very, very cool. Oh, sorry, 171. Nice. Nice find, Earl. Or whoever. Oh, actually, nice find, Richard, for sending
it
to us.
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Richard. So, Carrington, JavaScript.
Bringing it back to the Apple. What a surprise.
Now a Mac emulator as well?
Well, what's cool is, so this emulator, there's an emulator called PCE, and that's a emulator that's been out for a while. That's Hampa Hug, I think, is the guy behind it. So this is a JavaScript port of that. So it's PCE.js. And what's cool about this is it runs really smooth and really fast. If you've got a decent JavaScript, like if you're on a modern browser, this is going to run awesome. And what I like is we'll link to the main emulator, but there's a sub emulator that is the one I'm really going to recommend. So the main one is it shows a Mac Plus, and it just brings up the little screen. You see it in all its 1-bit glory, and it's running System 7, in fact, System 7.0.1. And installed on it are Mac Paint and Mac Draw and something called KidPix. So you get a real feel if you've never used the old, you know, like the SE, like I had for that Christmas. If you've never used a computer like that, like here it shows you. This is what the 9-inch screen would have looked like. All the menus are working in the old style. When you drag a window, you're dragging just the outline. It's the full retro Mac System 7 goodness. You can save. You can do everything with it. So it's a great emulator. But what I really like is they've got other demos there. And there's one demo that if you look off of the menu on the side, it'll say a Mac Plus hyphen System 6 plus games. And that's the one you really want to look at because, first of all, System 6, I was always a big fan. Love System 6. And
I actually hated life when System 7 came out.
Yeah, it took
a
while
for
it to get
buggy
decent.
Right at the beginning. And System
and this
6
one's running
was
6.08,
buddy,
which was one of the, you know, the last 6s and a really good stable version of 6. Mm-hmm. But instead of being loaded up with, you know, important software like MacDraw and MacPaint, those are seminal, very important works of software. But far more fun is to play with that same computer, and it's been loaded up with Shufflepuck Cafe and the black and white version of Prince of Persia, and it's got MacMan, the very famous shareware knockoff of Pac-Man. It's got Motorbike. It's got Stunt Copter, which I forgot all about Stunt Copter. So it's got these, if you were a classic Mac gamer from back in the super early days of the Mac, it's got the Star Wars game and Mac Yahtzee and Test Drive and like just all, and it's got Crystal Quest. Like, so it's
very
loaded up
cool
with a really nice selection of games that will bring back a lot. It's got Glider. In fact, it's got Glider Plus. So if you long for those, if any of those software titles ring a bell with you, dear listener, you're going to want to scurry off and play with this because it's a super fun way, just like the JavaScript mess thing that is being done with the Internet Archive. I love this new move to nice, fast, stable versions of playable and interactable computers and games online where you don't have to install any software, you don't have to run an emulator, you simply go to a website and there it is. And that's
just bring it up.
Yeah, it's a really nice, and I wish there was more of these. So this one has, over here on the PC site, which is run by James Friend, so it's got both those, and it also has two, using the same emulator, it's got two versions of an old IBM PC. So, and it's got one with Wolfenstein 3D and Monkey Island and stuff installed, and one that's just sort of a raw demo of Windows 3. So it's a really nice online emulator. It's really well implemented. I was very impressed.
Well, awesome. Yeah. And you've just cost me a lot more hours out of my life, so thank you very much.
Yeah, go on there and play
for
like,
that. I'm going to be
Stuntcopter. I haven't played Stuntcopter in like 25 years. I'm so excited.
So now tell me, is that the one where the copter, you're kind of looking at it third person and you're flying around in a 3D?
No, this is like a little side-based little copter guy, and below is a little horse with a little wagon, and you're going to drop your guy so he lands in the You got like a man hanging, and when you click the button, it's like a one button, your guy falls, and you have to try to make him land.
So it's a 2D scroller kind of thing?
Kind of, yeah, except it's just like this little wagon goes along the bottom, and you got to make your guy let go so that he tumbles and hopefully lands in the hay in the back of the wagon, otherwise he tumbles to his doom. And it's just like little things like that. I forgot
all
about
these games. Well, then, Carrington, you were a Mac guy, so what was the name of that game that you had a chopper, and you were flying around in the town, and it was kind of a 3D sort of landscape? It was a beautiful game on the Mac.
Don't know that game. The only chopper games I know this one are Stuntcopter and, of course, Choplifter from the Apple II days.
Somebody write in and tell me what that game was on the Mac, because I got to find that game.
Yeah, I love old games. So anyway, I was quite excited about this. It's a really good emulator, really well implemented, and lots of vintage Apple System 6 games you can go play without having to install anything. So run, don't walk, I say. So
nice.
What do you got to compete with that, Earl? What do you got?
Oh, yeah? Well, so how about this? I'm going to talk about an Apple thing.
I love it.
And the Apple thing has caused quite the excitement in the community.
Ooh.
Source code released for an early version of the Apple II disk operating system.
And legally released.
Here is the beauty part of this. Released with permission from Apple.
Which is crazy. I have no idea how that got arranged.
And they don't do it often.
They don't do it ever.
Well, and it's not just Apple. I mean, if you look at early IP from any of the big companies, you probably couldn't even still to this day get the source code for MBASIC 5.
And I get it, because I think companies are afraid. They don't see any upside to releasing it. Like, really, what does Apple get out of releasing this? But they're always worried, is there a downside we don't know about? If we release this, does that let somebody use that in something? Does it undercut a patent? Like, who knows what, right? So the lawyers are afraid.
Was there a derivative product that was based on this that now we're accidentally releasing?
Did
some
we actually rip off something and it's a secret in our closet that nobody knows? And when somebody goes through the source code, they'll go, I see, you ripped me off and I own half of Apple now. Like, who knows? So there's potential scary, huge downsides, which are probably not real, but lawyers deal in that sort of thing. So the fact that this is out and out with Apple's blessings is crazy.
And I hope I don't hold out any unreasonable expectations or hopes here, but I do hope this is the beginning of a trend.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you know, I don't talk about it much because it's controversial, but I think that copyright laws have been completely contorted and completely misused.
Preach on. I am with you completely.
And that, in fact, it has destroyed some of the computing legacy, because these things were so encumbered that they couldn't be released, and we're talking decades after their inception, and we can't go back and try and memorialize that history because people have still got their arms around it so tightly.
I think that's why this happened here, because it's not just being released to the wild. It was released into the arms of the Computer History Museum. And I think they were able to successfully argue that this is an important historical relic that needs to be preserved. And that argument ended up winning the day. So hooray for that.
For that, I think they're heroes.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so surprised that this happened. When I read about it, I'm like, there's got to be a catch. This can't really be real.
And there isn't. I guess the only catch is this is a really early version. I think it's a 13-sector version of DOS.
Right.
So, in fact, if you took the source code, even if you could get it to compile, it probably wouldn't result in a binary that would be of much practical use for you. But it's extremely interesting historically, and some of the documents that surround it are as well. And, of course, we've been reading lately some of the history coming out about how the first Apple II DOS was developed and the tight time frame that
right.
it was under.
Exactly, in 7 weeks or whatever. Yeah, it was crazy.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, we've got a link that we'll have in the show notes to computerhistory.org. Mm-hmm. I agree with you totally, Carrington. I think that this is just great all the way around. I hope it sparks a trend.
I think really so, too. Do. And I love what the Computer History Museum is doing. I love that they accomplished this. And in fact, on the page we're linking to over at computerhistory.org, there is actually you can donate through PayPal. And I ended up donating to them because I was so excited about this. I wanted to reward the efforts that must have gone behind the scenes of this and hopefully encourage them to have the wherewithal to be able to do more of this sort of thing for, you know, get the same stuff for Commodore, for Atari, for, wrestle it out of Sinclair's hands and whatever, just to preserve it. Even if they could just get it and say, we promise we'll just lock it in a tin and we won't release it for 100 years when no one cares. Just like, because I'm so worried that if they don't do it now, it's when the companies do, when they are willing to give it up, no one will be able to find it, or the companies dissolve. Like, you go and try to get something out of Atari now. Well, who even owns it anymore?
Right.
And there no longer be that canonical person who says, I have the rights and I can give it over. The only reason this could happen with Apple is Apple ended up surviving to this day and it's still the same company. But could you even get this from Commodore, from Atari, from TI? Like, who knows? Like, who actually has the right to give up that stuff anymore? It all gets muddied behind copyright.
Yep. And in this case, if you take that stuff and you escrow it somehow, then you're right. In the future, when the legal stuff gets cleared up, or when it finally falls out of copyright, after you and I are long dead and the robot overlords have taken over the world, at least it'll still be there. So,
two things about that. First of all, they're going to be my robots. Bow before me.
Oh, okay. I thought that was the case. I wasn't going to mention it. I thought you were trying to keep that under wraps.
And the second thing, I hate copyright, I hate trademarks, and I hope somebody out there other than me is just hacking into systems and getting this stuff and releasing it anyway. So I say, rise up, fight the power. Just because I hate this stuff getting lost to history. I just like, because I do love it and I do think it's important.
Yep.
Cool.
What's Google BBS Terminal?
Well, since you're talking about Apple stuff, I'll bring it around to something else. So last bit of news, this is crazy sweet. So it's over at masswork.at, I think. And we'll have a link
these
in the show notes.
These guys have done other stuff like this.
This one is awesome. So imagine you wanted to use Google and do a Google search. But it was the mid-80s or earlier, and it was a BBS-based system. So this is not even an emulator. Like, it's a real front end to real current Google, but it loads up with all the sounds and display. It's like a color ASCII terminal that is dialing into Google, and you type your search, and it'll bring up the results, and you can actually interact with it. It's got the, if I feel lucky, it'll do a search and bounce you over to the first result, or you can actually get Google results and basically search Google at BBS speeds with BBS sounds and a BBS front end, and it is just lovely. Brings back a lot of memories. I loved it. I love playing
sounds.
With it. Yeah, it's got the modem sound, dials in, and you're basically connecting it like 300 baud, and it's about that kind of speed, and it's slow, and it's beautiful. I love it.
Actually, it sounded like Bell 103 tones.
Ooh, look at you, Mr. Fancy.
Signing it. Oh,
Mr.
Oh, he's
Fancy.
Thrown down the standards.
I used to be able to do that. I used to be able to listen to anything and go, okay, that was connected to this. Like, I didn't have to look. I used to be able to, but my skills are no longer as mad as they used to be.
Well, because we don't listen to that every day. But
no, but I should.
Yeah, when the 56K modems came out, wasn't that fun?
That was
sounded like an angry dance of tones.
An angry dance of tones, the Earl Evans story.
Looking for a powerful home computer? This is the one. Texas Instruments home computer. With 16K memory, it can take you a long way. Want a computer with a lot of software? Oh, yeah, this is the one. The TI home computer gives you more of these software cartridges than any computer in the world. The whole world. So, with all the power you have here to run all the power here, this is the one. The home computer from Texas Instruments. This is the one.
So I have to come up with a geek gift.
You do, and you have to buy it from me.
Okay. All right.
That's
going to
be the
way.
Rule.
It's on the way.
Awesome.
So, and actually, this would be good for you, Carrington, because with the lack of hair
right,
that
yes.
you have,
I am shown, as they
sometimes
say.
The reflection of that makes it hard for me to discern where your head ends and your body begins.
I prefer to think of it as I have my own blank canvas for projection. So sometimes you're at a movie and like, oh my gosh, what will we do? This no screen. Carry to the rescue, just stand up front. It's awesome.
Or that you're solar powered.
I am indeed solar powered. If I would only go outside.
Well, but as you mentioned, you're in Canada as winter approaches.
Exactly.
So what have you got?
What have you got for me?
Well, you know, tags. I have some tags for you.
Nice.
This is a necklace that has two HTML tags: slash head, which says this is where the head ends, and body, which this is where the body begins. And you wear it as a necklace.
That becomes amazing.
Exceedingly clear to people that this is the end of the head and the beginning of the body.
I need this kind of bling in my life. This is awesome.
Yes, and now there's only so many, it depends on the circles you hang out with, but there's only so many people who will get this. But I want to hang out with the people who do get it. Me too.
In fact,
yes.
I want to walk around and meet the girl who's like wearing it, because then I'll know I'm supposed to fall in love with her immediately. Whoever is wearing this, I must marry her, because this is awesome.
Yes, love at first tag.
Absolutely.
And you can get this from a store on Etsy, cool. And we'll have a link for it. It's $9 US, which is, what, $27.50 Canadian or something like that?
Nine and a little bit.
Yeah, I think actually our dollars are almost in parity at the moment, aren't they?
I think yours is back now being a little more than ours. Mm. As we do that dance back and forth, I think right now the Canadian dollar is a little tiny bit lower than yours.
So now it's hard to tell from the picture actually how big this really is.
I hope it's massive.
Like it's a billboard.
It says it's 1.5 inches tall and 2.25 inches wide. I don't know what an inch is, but...
Yeah, I have to translate that to metric. I think it's like 170 centimeters or something. So, yeah, this is great. And everybody should get it and wear it, because then we'll know that you're HTML5 compliant.
This is a really smart idea for a necklace. That's really cool. Nice find.
And what else have we got? We have to talk about other things to buy.
Well, I found something very interesting.
Oh my gosh, you have the eBay auction to end them all.
In fact, I even think I wrote to you like, well, I win this one.
You don't just win this one.
This is definitely the most expensive item I have picked. It has a buy it now of $195,000. And it is an Apple Museum. And I mean that quite literally. It's an entire Apple Museum.
Tell us about it.
Well, the thing is, it's for somebody asking for $150,000 starting bid, it's woefully under-described. So it's billed as a ready-to-go Apple Museum. And but you kind of have to know what's going on by just looking at the pictures. The description says most of them work, and that's sort of what you have. I'm like, come on. Like,
I would expect a full provenance.
Totally, and just like a complete list. But looking through the photos, it has really nice representative models from Apple going right back. I don't see any Apple II stuff. So it's basically from the Macintosh era forward, but it's the really early stuff. It has an Apple Lisa II. It has lots of different models of like through the classic era and the performer era. It's got a ton of different laptops of the PowerBook variety and the Duos. It's got a Macintosh portable, lots of different versions of the iMac and the various color versions of that. And then the tower machines, and it has various printers, and it's got the Apple scanners and the Apple, it's got the Apple TV card thingy and eyesights and various keyboards, and it's got speakers, and it's all basically Apple branded stuff and posters. And they're all out laid on tables with these great little cards that tell you about the various items.
That's the nice thing. It's not just the artifacts. It's they're selling a museum, and it is an entire museum.
But the thing is, and it's got the Newton stuff, but does it come with the tables? Like, I don't, the problem is they're not giving out, like, is it the space? Like, for this, do you actually get the, like, presumably not, but are these going to be boxed? And now it's local pickup only, and it's available in Medicine Hat, Alberta. So it's Canadian, baby. And I'm trying to figure out who the heck this is so I could get a hold of them and get more info. There's one day and 19 hours left, no bids so far. But it's kind of not surprising that this wouldn't necessarily sell through eBay. Maybe it's something just to make people aware of it.
I actually think it's fascinating that they would take something of this magnitude and sell it through eBay.
Right. Well, I don't know if they're even trying to. Maybe they just decided, let's make this available. Here's a great way to let the vintage collectors and the general hobbyists know that this is available. and maybe people will approach them directly. I don't know how serious this attempt at the sale is. It's got a 20th anniversary Mac in there, which looks nice. So it's a nice layout. You look at it and go, oh my goodness, it is a whole, it's like a huge room full of period, and it goes in order, and each table is its own kind of thing. So it's a cool and beautiful collection. Is it worth $150,000 or $195,000? I don't know. Like, you'd have to look at this and go, lots of these are iMacs and general performers and things. I see LCs in the background and some Quadra Towers. And like, a lot of these aren't going to be going for a crazy amount of money. There's no count of like how many computers, how many of each. Like, there's not nearly enough information to cough up.
I completely agree with you. Not enough detail to justify.
But it's one of the most
dollars.
Interesting eBay auctions I've ever stumbled across, where I was like, what the heck is this? Like, it's like, talk about somebody who's at the peak of that cycle we opened with. This is a guy who went a little crazy, and he's now coming down that slope fast.
Yeah, all at once, yep. As it were.
And it's got a bunch of items here individually that I would really like. It's got like the earliest version of the Apple laser printer thing with that one weird cartridge in the front, and it's got some unique items that I don't really see around much, but it also has a lot of items you kind of see everywhere. So
right.
I don't know, but it's nicely laid out. When you see it all displayed as, oh, there's an Apple II in the background. It looks like there is some Apple II stuff. But when you see it all laid out like this, it's really pretty. It looks a lot like what they, in fact, it doesn't look as nice as the one that David and the museum people put together for the Vintage Computer Festival. Like, that one looked amazing.
Mm-hmm. The pop-up museum.
Yeah. But this is still pretty sweet. You could make a whole, this is a museum. So that's my choice. $150,000. What do you got? What do you possibly have to compete with that one, Earl? I'm feeling very competitive, clearly.
I'm at completely the opposite end of the spectrum.
Right.
But ironically, once again, I'm going Apple.
Oh, this is a great podcast. This is one of the best episodes we've ever done. I like it. Down with Commodore. It's wonderful. I feel in that wonderful six-color glow.
I love Commodore, but I have to admit, I've always had a curiosity about these laser Apple II clones.
Ah, right, the clones, yes.
Yes, because the nicest computer store that I worked at, it was called HW Computers. Mm-hmm. It was in Southern California. We had a beautiful store layout, very nicely decorated, and the store architecture was awesome, kind of this Spanish-inspired architecture. It is a beautiful store to walk into.
I actually miss old computer stores. The Apple stores are cool, but man, if I could travel in time, one of the things I'd be doing is just walking and browsing through like early 1980s computer stores.
Yes.
Oh.
Now, I've found one or two photographs, and I've actually talked to some of my friends who I used to work with at
Don't
the computer.
Show off that you have friends. That's mean.
I have one or two because I pay them. But they may have old photos of these stores, and yes. I want these photos. I want to get the photos up on the web. I want to, you know, it's another one of
but
those.
But that's the kind of museum I want. I mean, if you have a vintage computer museum, it should have a vintage computer shop attached to it, and that's the gift store. Even if it didn't sell stuff, it should be laid out as if you could buy it.
The old computer stores were cool.
Yeah.
So we couldn't get Apple products, sadly, because this was Southern California, and you couldn't walk a block without tripping over an Apple II dealership.
Right.
And Apple was wisely not wanting to oversaturate particular areas with Apple II dealerships.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't easy to become an Apple II dealer, so we weren't. So instead, we sold the Franklin. And people wanted Apple II. When they'd see a Franklin, they'd be, hey, kind of, what's that?
Right.
Well, it runs all the Apple II software. I don't know. So it was a little bit more of a hard sell, but the Franklin was a very decent machine. I've never had the chance to play with one of these lasers, so I couldn't tell you one way or the other, but I've heard good things about them. Do you know anything about the Laser 128?
I know nothing. The Laser and the Franklin I know of, like the Franklin Ace, there was like the 500, the 1000, the 2100, and then the Lasers I know of is like, I know the Laser 128, which is the one you've selected. But I am woefully ignorant when it comes to the clones. Like, I was into Apple II stuff, had like actual Apple II things. I've never owned or even really had my hands on a clone. The clones that really draw my eye are the weird clones. Well, somebody would go up and say, well, here's an Apple II clone that was produced. There's only 60 units. It was handmade in Bulgaria. And I was like, oh.
The Eastern Bloc clones are really fascinating, aren't they?
And sometimes they have these big metal, like they're just these awesome things.
Yes.
But it's the real clones, like the clones that seem to be the ones that were, you know, that everybody knew and were actually selling and actually worked are the Franklin, and in this case, the Laser 128. If I was going to get a clone, I think the Laser 128 is the one I would get. I've always kind of liked the form factor. I like the built-in drive. It's sort of like an Apple IIc thing going on, but with the built-in handle. And I've always liked the look of the keyboard. And in particular, what I like here is they've got some photos from the side. And I've always really liked the side because it's kind of got that keyboard on an angle and little mm-hmm. volume thing. I like the industrial design of the Laser 128 very much.
Yes.
Oh, and this is only $20.
This is one of the reasons that I picked it, is because they're starting it at such a reasonable price. Now, it won't stay at $20.
Yes, it will. I'm going to buy it.
Here's the downside.
Oh.
They don't know if it works.
Oh. I always think that means they do know it doesn't work.
No, I don't think so. In reading the description in this case, I think it means that they don't know how to test it.
Oh, and it comes with a box, though.
They found it in a storage unit, and they plugged it in and turned it on, and the lights came on,
okay,
but that's
no
all they know to do.
No smoke or anything, so that's good.
Yeah, and so the other downside is the pictures are pretty crummy. For a seller that has 2,600 feedbacks, you would think that we could get some pictures that weren't fuzzy.
You would think that. Maybe the actual computer is fuzzy.
Oh, that's
it's
right.
It's the Laser 128O, O standing for out of focus.
Just like, what was the comedian who said, it's not the photographer's fault. Bigfoot is just natively out of focus.
That's a great idea. And probably all UFOs actually have like fur on the outside to make them look fuzzy. And that's part of how they stay hidden. You're right. These are very fuzzy things, but it's a Laser 28 looking kind of clean and with a box. That's definitely worth more than $20.
Now, the pictures that aren't fuzzy, the ones that aren't, unfortunately, don't have the keyboard in them, but the other pictures are a lot more nice. And this does look really clean.
Yep. I like
so,
it. I'll add it to my museum that I'm going to buy.
That's right.
So I'm now
going
to spend $150,020. Nice.
It'd be interesting to see what this goes for. I always try and pick auctions that are newly listed.
Right.
So that listeners have at least a small fighting chance of going out to look at them before they close.
There's less than 2 days left for my auction choice, so I'll try to get this published really quick so people can spend their $150,000.
And you never know. I mean, it's one of a kind, so it may go immediately, that museum.
I don't think so.
I've never seen that.
I think it's not going anywhere.
What else have we got here? I think, wow, we're done except for closing discussions.
Well, my closing discussion actually is going to bring us right back to eBay.
Okay.
Because there's something going on eBay that I don't understand. And I've tweeted about it a bunch of times, and nobody responds. So there's got to be something wrong with this listing, but I don't know what it is. So there is at the moment, and there has been for the last like 6-7 weeks, a new inbox Apple IIc, still brand new, still sealed, and it's what I think the best model of the original Apple IIc. It's the A2S 4100, which is the version that could take the extra RAM. And it comes with the extra RAM. So it's like my dream Apple IIc computer. Totally sealed, brand new in box, with the receipt and everything. And it's asking $1,000, which is a lot of money. But
the last sealed Apple IIc
went for a bunch.
Yeah, you remember that?
This has not been able to find a bidder for almost 2 months. It keeps getting relisted. So there's something wrong with this that people who are smarter than me can recognize. Maybe it's I don't know what it is, and I keep watching the video. It's got about 2.5 days left. I'm sure it'll get relisted now. One of the downsides is the person who is looking to sell it only has 7 feedbacks. So it's a new guy. Do you want to give $1,000 to somebody who's brand new? But
gotcha.
I guess. But still, I would have thought this sold. Now maybe this means things are finally breaking and the insane prices for computers will go away. That would be great. But I still would have thought this guy would find at least one buyer somewhere in the world who would cough up. Honestly, I have almost wanted to pull the trigger myself because I would love to do an unboxing video for an Apple IIc.
That would be the ultimate sacrilege.
But it's $1,000, and I don't think I want to spend $1,000 to do that unboxing video. But I don't know. Like, so if you're interested in Apple IIc and you've always wanted one, there is one for sale, but nobody else seems to think it's worth bidding on, and I honestly can't tell why. So maybe we'll get somebody who's better at this than me, like Tony Diaz, will write it and say, didn't you notice this, and this is why it's fake, or this is what's wrong with it? Because there must be something wrong with it, but I don't know what.
So somebody tell us.
Yeah, because I'm really interested.
What's the deal with this? Is there any, on the listing on eBay, is there any Q&A? Does anyone ask any questions
about
this? Yes,
somebody, let me open it up. Somebody had asked, and I'll make sure we'll have the link to it in the show notes. Oh, wait, you at the moment, no, because it keeps, I guess, getting relisted. But I know somebody had asked a question
right.
before.
So the old QA
and
would
the person
fall
currently
off.
Doesn't offer shipping to Canada, though I wrote to him to ask him, in fact, I'll open up my email, to ask him, hey, about that item. Like,
would you ship to Canada?
Well, just to see, did he write back, and is it like a real person or what have you? And he did write back, and the shipping to Canada was, it was like $350 or something. I was like, oh my goodness.
Oof.
Partly because this also, in addition to the Apple IIc, still sealed in a box, it's got an Apple IIc, the Apple monochrome monitor, like the just a green monitor that came with it, also new in box and still sealed.
Not the tiny monitor, but the regular CRT.
It would be the tinier one. Like, so it's the Apple monochrome monitor. So it's the tinier one that's black and white, though, not the tiny color one. So it's the one you'll normally see on the stand, the little 2C stand. So it's that monitor, but also still sealed and brand new in box. And that monitor itself will normally go for like $200, $250, especially if it's brand new. So I'm thinking like, and because of the weight and the size of this, it's prohibitively expensive. And I'm not about to drop, you know, $1,500 to get this thing. But holy cow, I've been wondering why this doesn't sell. Like, I don't see why this isn't selling for
fascinating
for week after week. And I've tweeted about it, and there's something wrong with this listing, and I don't know what it is, and I'd love to know what's wrong. And I just keep watching it, and it keeps getting relisted, and I keep waiting for someone to pull the trigger.
Well, there's lots of RCR listeners who follow eBay auctions quite vigorously. Yesterbits comes to mind, in fact.
I will be jealous of whoever buys it.
Let us know why it's not selling when that other boxed, brand new in box 2C went for such a gargantuan
I know.
Sum.
Ages
three
ago,
times so. What they're
And honestly,
was.
How many more? This, I would have thought, would be your last chance. Like, how many still sealed 2Cs are there?
There can't be.
There can't be a lot. And honestly, folks, if you want it to stay sealed, don't let me buy it. Because if I buy it, you know I'm opening it up.
It's coming out the box.
Right away. I will turn on the cameras, but I am still cutting that sucker
Day
open.
Day one.
Absolutely. If this was a 2E, I might actually have bought it because I'm much more of a 2E guy than a 2C. And if it was the same condition, same everything, and it was the exact model I always wanted, I might have actually bought it. I do love to open the new stuff. So that's what I got going on. Too cold to go outside, so I just sit at home and watch this same auction over and over week after week. What about you, Earl? Do you have more of a life than me?
Well, not yet.
Oh.
But so I'm going to talk about something that it's the first time I've talked about it in public.
Oh, Earl, your alcohol problem.
I'm a little nervous.
This is a safe space, Earl. We've been meeting. All of us have gathered you here to tell you that we love you and you have a problem.
Hi, my name is Earl.
Your problem is you don't buy me alcohol. and what
That's
is wrong
right.
with that?
Like on airplane, I have a drinking problem.
Yes.
So, Carrington, I'm writing a book.
Earl? Tell me about your book. That's very exciting.
The working title is Back for a Bit.
Nice. I get it. There's a pun in there because the word bit. I'm following.
There is. It's one of those computer geeky puns.
I like those computer geeky puns.
The goal of the book is to chronicle the hobby of retro computing.
I like
this
it.
This is a book for geeks, by geeks.
And retro computing, not like looking at, like most books are about like, oh, this is the computer as it was. This is about like the modern scene of retro computing.
Exactly.
Nice.
Where it came from, where it's going, what people are doing, the who, what, why, when of what we do in the hobby of retro computing.
I am going to buy your book.
Well, thank you.
And you are
you
going
know
to
how
sign
much
it for me.
Yet.
Well, hopefully it won't be so much that you only need to sell that one. Because then I'm disappointed that I've already committed. Because I would have instead bought that museum.
So this will be self-published. I don't have a publisher waiting in the wings to swoop down and
that's what everything does
advance
nowadays.
And I actually like the idea of self-publishing. It has some downsides, but my wife has volunteered to be my editor, which I think is great because she's very articulate and intelligent. And as almost 30 years being together has shown, she is not at all bashful about telling me when I'm full of baloney.
That's so important. Important your editor is willing to do that, but with love.
Yes, in a loving way, she will bonk me over the head and tell me to get back in there and rewrite this section.
Nice, so back for a bit. Any idea when we're looking at roughly maybe having it out?
My goal is a release in July of 2014.
Ooh, that's exciting, because that's not actually that long away.
It's not that far, which is kind of scary, because some of the work is done of the book, but some of the key work... I am inspired by folks like Jason Scott, Brian Bagnell, and other authors who have sought to tell a story through the eyes of the people who are involved in the particular activity, rather than this being a lot of pontificating on my part. I want other people to do all that pontificating.
Cool.
Because I think that's a lot more interesting when you get a variety of viewpoints and... You know, who wants to hear from me? I mean, people hear from me enough. So retrocomputing has been around for a while now. I want to go back and talk about how this kind of gelled, you know, the embryonic years of retrocomputing, which goes back to, I think, back in the 90s with some of the mailing lists and people getting together and starting to collect some of the big iron. And then it got into the smaller systems. And as we've gone forward, what are we doing today? We're doing all kinds of stuff.
I
mean, there's a million different things that are going on. You got the demo scene. You got the chiptune scene. You got the festival scene with people doing things like Kansas Fest and the VCFs and the Commodore shows and things like that, the TI and the Coco shows that people get together and they do all these fun things. You've got, obviously, all the stuff we talk about with modern-day hardware accessories. There's a billion different podcasts. How many different podcasts are there now
Seven.
For retro computing?
I'm just
there
kidding,
are a
yes.
lot.
You
there
ask,
are
I answer.
Than there were. And so, anyway, I want to get off my duff and get this thing going. Some of the groundwork is done. I've done some writing on this, but if you are involved in retrocomputing, one thing that you may expect to happen is to be hearing from me, because I want to interview a bunch of people
Sweet.
About this. And I want to actually invite people that if they want to be interviewed for this, if they – now, by interviewed, I don't mean that the quotes will directly go into the book, but in a lot of cases they will. So – I hope to collect as much information as I can from as many different sources, and naturally, the book can't go on forever, so not everything will make the cut.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the more the merrier. So that is – and what that means is the retro podcasts that I do will not take a back seat to this, because I see them as very synergistic.
Sure, absolutely there. Yeah, totally.
So Retrobits, Next Without Four, Chicken Lips Radio, those things won't suffer from this. In fact, they may be boosted because of this.
Mm-hmm.
But other projects that I do with retrocomputing, like I still wanted to write that reverse-y program for the Commodore, network reverse-y. I wanted to do some things with the microcontroller and electronic stuff that I've been doing.
There's only ever so much time.
It's a time thing. And
yeah.
So some of those other retro projects may have to wait until after this thing hits the
virtual. I wish someone would just pay me to just sit around and play with retro stuff for a living.
We need benefactors.
I need to retire is what I need to do.
Yeah, we got to go find somebody rich to be our benefactor.
Yeah, sugar daddy is what you're saying. We need sugar daddies.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll sashay for you. Just pay me for my retro stuff.
Nice. Very cool.
So that's the deal. That's what's going on in my end.
I like your deal, dude. I am looking forward to this book very, very, very much.
And I'm looking forward to publish it. It's one of the things that's always been a goal.
Cool.
You know, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe there's a little bit of ego involved, but really...
But it's also good to get that goal out there. I find for me personally, like stating the goals and stating it publicly is the best motivator in the world to give you the best chance to actually get it done, right? So I love it. I am very excited.
It puts a stake in the ground, doesn't it?
Like
it. Sense that you're yep. gonna, and not like a beautiful T-bone or filet mignon.
don't put those in the ground. It'd be kind of weird.
Don't put those in the ground because they're lovely. So that's all I got.
I like it. I'm very excited. Oh, you know what? We have one more thing. Are you going to come to Toronto next weekend? No, 2 weekends from now.
Come to Toronto? I wish I was.
I just noticed, and I guess we'll mention it because it's Saturday, December 7th, and we'll next be recording on Saturday, December 8th. But Saturday, December 7th here in Toronto will be the World of Commodore 2013.
Oh, I wish I was coming for that. The T-Pug puts that on every year, and it is, from what I understand, just a wonderful show.
Unsurprisingly, I don't intend to attend.
Oh, Carrington, live on the wild side. It's in your backyard.
I am thinking, what if I go and try to undermine that from within?
Yeah, you could wear a disguise. You could wear the Carrington Groucho mustache glasses.
Because I think the public would like to know if these people secretly wish there was Apple IIs. I think maybe someone needs to go and ask those questions.
See, I don't think we want that secret revealed.
I think you do. It's only, I like it. It's only $10. I might just head over. I've just put that in my calendar. Look out, World of Commodore. I'm coming for you.
I'm calling my buddies in T-Pug right now.
Speaking of T-Pug, I guess we'll talk about this probably next show because it'll have happened. But I was really good friends with a guy named Derek Campbell in high school. And his dad, we'll call him Mr. Campbell, was either a big member of T-Pug or like a founding member. Like, so I knew about T-Pug back in the day when it was like talking about current computers. Mm-hmm. Because back in the 80s, I was friends with a fellow who said, oh, yeah, his dad was a big part of T-Pug. And I was like, what the heck is T-Pug? And it was the Toronto Pet User Group. And I was like, that's not Apple. But I always remembered that T-Pug exists and Derek's dad was a part of it. So I wonder if I go there, if my good friend from high school's father will be there. And I will get him to admit he loves the Apple better.
I don't think you will.
I'm going to try.
And in fact, yes, back in the early 80s, I really, because they were holding, and I don't know if it was called this or not, but they were holding Commodore shows mm-hmm. in Toronto back in the early 80s. They were doing this annual event. And I, for the life of me, I don't remember what it was called back then, but I really wanted to go. I wanted to save up and go. I never actually made it, sadly.
Well, go Toronto. Hooray for Toronto. We don't have any Apple II events happening every year, that's for sure. So,
yeah, so. So, yes, Carrington, I give you special dispensation. You can go to this and you will be absolved.
I'm going to tell people I'm you. Hello, I'm Earl Evans, and the Apple.
They'd never know.
Anyway, I thought I'd mention that because it's next week, and I just realized it's before we record our next show. So
very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, wow, that was weird. I came up with two Apple things, and you mentioned the World of Commodore.
Cats and dogs, man. Cats and dogs living together. World is crazy.
We are off our polarity today. So with that, I'm going to close the show.
Close it.
In fact, as the show notes say, that's it for this show. You can find the show notes for all the Retro Computing Roundtable shows at rcrpodcast.com. Yes, that domain coincidentally has RCR in it. You can discuss in the forums at, and this isn't on the RCR podcast domain, but it's a wonderful forum, the Vintage Computer Forums, vintage-computer.com/VC forum. You can follow RCR on Twitter at RCR podcast. And of course, the hashtag you always want to use for that is Commodore is great. You can send feedback to feedback@rcrpodcast.com. And I noticed on iTunes, some of you have gone out and have created very nice reviews for us.
It's so awesome that people do that. Really,
it literally warmed my heart. It gave me a super duper more boost than my caffeine today, seeing the nice reviews on iTunes. So thank you for that. And until next time, Retro Compute.
Nicely said.
Adios.
Bye. It's a place of love and color where pretty girls are